So last time we started the topic, primarily what we discussed was Rav Moshe Feinstein. We saw that he had felt that to invite somebody to come, although his case was not inviting somebody to come for a meal, his case was a variation of two cases, inviting children to come over to some type of minyan for in a Beit Knesset to give special prizes and to encourage people for them to come, which he felt was implicit in this was that you're actually inviting some kind of a parent to drive them because they were just not going to work. And Rav Moshe said two things. One thing that he said is that he felt that this was the prohibition of being a mesit, which is really quite extreme. A mesit is somebody who causes someone to do avodah zarah. So Rav Moshe was mechadesh. He said something which we really don't see in other places. And again, I'm going to say parenthetic, we don't see subsequently that other poskim agreed with him, is that he felt that to get the punishment of being a mesit, then it needed to be a avodah zarah. But to encourage someone to do any kind of an avera would be a law, an application of this law of mesit. And as I said, that's something which could be somewhat debatable. I mean, for that point, why not just say that this falls into the category of what we normally call a shliach dvar avera. We say in shliach dvar avera. So why the fact that I told someone to do something, why would I get any responsibility? In fact, we say quite the opposite generally, is that divrei harav and divrei talmud mishamim. God told you not to do it, I told you to do it. Why are you listening to me? Listen to God. Which means, where's the responsibility? As I said, there's a lot more that could be said about this. Okay, so mesit was one. The second issue was one of lifniver, because you're facilitating, causing, helping someone to sin. So the question then that arose is that when we went back and looked in the sources about Lifnei Iver, we found very quickly that this really didn't stand up to the category of Lifnei Iver. As far as the Lifnei Iver went, that wasn't as simple as what Rav Moshe made it sound. We found that Lifnei Iver, according to many Mefarshim, has a lot of categories, and I don't recall if we went as far as getting to the Shulchan Aruch and seeing the Shach, but the Shach in source 13 quotes from a Mordechai and says that when you're dealing with a non-religious Jew, someone who doesn't keep Shabbat, there is no halacha of Lifnei Iver. I didn't say that this, did or did I? Yeah, so I did say this. So I may have said this, I didn't say it, but either way, this was in source 13. It says, Ma she'en kein ba'oved kochavim b'Yisroel mumar she'enu chayav la'afrisho. He says, no, by those cases that you don't do it. I think we did do this. Also a couple lines before, it said, O Mumar Shari, there's no Yisur Lifnei Iver. I guess the reason is that to be blind, and there's easily two different ways to look at this. To be blind, don't put a stumbling block in a blind person, is only if that person really would consider it a stumbling block. But if the person says, no, this is not a stumbling block, this is what I want. They're habitual sinners. It's not a stumbling block for them. It's what they want. So I guess that's conceptually where it's coming from. But as I said, the Shach is based upon Mordechai. And let's now move on. More to the general discussion of Lifnei Iver, we have in source 14 a tshuva from the Netziv, Meshiv Davar. We're more familiar with the Netziv, perhaps, from his commentary on the Chumash or from some of his other works. But he also wrote Shedat and Tshuvot. And over here, he's asked, Al Davar Tabach, Asher Dar Kolam Korbasar Trefa, Shebiado Lubate Hasarim. So you have somebody who's either a butcher or a shochet, who when something goes treif, he sells it to the non-Jews, or he sells it to one of the wealthy sarim. Now, one of these sarim happens to be a Jewish. So he continues and he says, Vine echad mi asarim hu Yisrael poshea, which means he's a Jew who just doesn't keep halacha. Im rishay lavi lebeito gam ken basar trefa. Can he get rid of his non-kosher food by bringing it over to the Jew who doesn't care? Now, right away, on a moral level, every person in this room would say, no, that's wrong. It's wrong. Just on a moral level, you would say that it's wrong, but the Netziv has a harder time figuring out why it's wrong. Because, again, the Netziv happens to know the laws about Lifnei Iver, so once you know these laws, to actually put your finger on it comes a little difficult. Right. So, as I said, once you know the contours of the law of Lifnei Iver, then you realize it's not so easy to point your finger and say why this isn't okay, even though I'm going to say, again, on a moral level, we may be disturbed, But he writes over here towards the end, Miu Yeshlomo Dafilo Shitat Rashi Lo Asor B'Misayeya Elo Lefnei Shat Avera Elo Ba'ofen D'Misayeya Goreim Hakdama Kol Shken Kamo Lo Shit Machal Asor La Mumar. From Rashi, it would seem only if it's at the same time is there a problem with Misayeya. But if there's a time lag between it, then it shouldn't be a problem. And over here he says, V'lo ye ikuv kol shkein b'mara don atzmo, da ha-shivcha b'vaday titametz la-sig b'shato, imken lo mikri siyua klal v'shari l'kuli alma. Zeus for a pshuta de lo mikri misayeya klal. He ends up saying, no, this is certainly not a case of lefnei iver, it's not a case of misayeya. And I guess the question therefore is, if you own a store, and your store sells kosher and non-kosher products, okay, this is not all that often in Israel, but in America, you have lots of stores, which could be a big, whatever, chain store. You happen to own it, and it sells kosher food, and it sells non-kosher food. So presumably, you would think the Jews would buy the kosher food, and the non-Jews would eat the buy the non-kosher food. But what if a Jew insisted on buying the non-kosher food? So he's basically saying over here, you're not doing Lifnei Iver, you're not doing Misayeya. It doesn't stand up to the critical analysis of either of these things, so therefore, it would seem to be okay. The next tshuva, which is related, but maybe not related, but we'll see why it is related, is tshuva from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Now, the first thing I'm going to say about this, it's source 15. What I'm going to say about this is that he published this in his Sefer. What you should understand from that statement is as opposed to what we're going to see in a couple of minutes. But here's something that he went and he published, and the question is very simple. The question is, if I am an observant individual, and somebody who's not observant comes to my house, am I allowed to give them anything to eat or to drink? Why should this be a problem? Because they will presumably not say a bracha. If they give them bread, they'll presumably not wash for a motzi. So therefore, am I being guilty of lifnei iver by putting food in front of somebody who's not going to make a bracha? And I can assure you that there are sources that will tell us that no, you can't do that because you are actively giving them something and causing them to sin. So it would become very analogous to giving wine to the Nazir. Whether it's perfectly analogous or not, I'm not sure, but let's take a look. Source 15. Kibur b'achila v'shtiyah l'mishi yodea shelo yivarech. Am I allowed to give food to somebody who I know is not going to make a bracha? Ba'ad tzarech kol adam l'sum dracha v'lachavein ma'asav l'shem shemayim. A person really needs, when they do things, whatever it is that we do, we need to do them l'shem shemayim for the proper intention. Choshavni, it occurred to me, b'misha ba'alav oreach, chashuv. So you have an important guest. She'inenu shomer Torah u'mitzvah. Somebody who happens not to be religious. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman is probably thinking outside out loud for himself. I mean, he had various ministers, members of government, people who would come and consult with him. I mean, everybody came to Rav Shlomo Zalman. So what happens when the prime minister, or if that's a little exaggerated, what happens when a foreign minister or somebody dealing with the military, a general, comes in and asks him for advice about something? Is he allowed to put a drink in front of him? He continues, and then he gives a more specific case where he moves it away from him, as we'll see in a second. Aval adayin yesh lo ahava levnei Torah. What if the person who's coming to visit you really has respect or even love for yeshiva students? V'gam tomech b'mostot Torah u'chidome. And this person actually financially supports these places. V'im ha'bal ha'bayit lo yinaheg ito b'nimus ha'mekubal l'chaber oto b'midei d'michal u'mishte. That if the host does not treat him in the way that we normally treat guests, by giving them something to eat or drink, putting something out, because why shouldn't he give it? Because it's written in the Shulchan Aruch. Because we know the halacha is you're not allowed to give that person anything to eat or drink. Or take the alternative, give him something to eat, but say, sir, can you please now come and wash your hands so that you can eat, even if you do it respectfully? That's insulting to the individual that you behave in this way towards. And that can cause someone to get very upset. And therefore, he catches his language. It seems. This person who's not religious, but he supports Torah institutions, that this will cause him to become even further from a religious life. And cause him anger and disrespect towards anybody who keeps the Torah life. Debekai gavna choshavni. So again, you see that he's saying, I think, in such a situation, it would seem to me, shenachon b'met l'chabed oto ba'achila v'shtiyah. Now, that's interesting, because he just now told you to do something which theoretically the Shulchan Aruch said you can't do. V'lo l'chosh klal v'isur shel l'fne'iver l'tid m'chshel, and not to be concerned at all about the problem of l'fne'iver. So, of course, what's our question going to be? Why not? What happened to l'fne'iver? That sounds to be quite a concern. Mishum da'af she'enom rim la'adam la'asot isur azuta k'dei la'tzilach rim isur rabba. We have a general principle. We will not tell one person to do a minor sin in order to avoid from someone else from doing a major sin. This is a Gemara in Shabbat, which is called the situation of Ridiyat Hapat, which means somebody stuck some flour or like a pita on the side of an oven. So to take it off of the oven is called Ridiyat Hapat, which is a minor issue. But you would do that to prevent the person who put it there from being guilty of a more serious thing, namely of baking. So there we have Tosfot comments on the Gemara over there, but generally we have a conclusion that we don't tell someone to do a sin to stop someone else from doing a sin, even if the second sin is a bigger sin. Because I could do math. I could say, hold it a second, if my sin I'm going to do will be a minor sin to prevent him from doing a major sin, so maybe in terms of the general world this is a better thing to do. So what does Rav Shlomo Zalman say? We don't say that. That's not the way that we approach things. V'asur vade lafrish tumot ma'isur b'shabbat kidei latzil. And for example, we don't take Trumot and Ma'asot on Shabbat to prevent someone else from eating something which they could not eat. Mikol Makom, despite giving a pretty good reason why we shouldn't do this, he continues and says, "Benidon ze hoil v'kol isur shalanotin lo leechol hurak aveir shalanetidnat michshol." The whole problem of giving him food is a problem of being guilty of lefnei v'lotin michshol. But if you don't give him, then you're going to be machshil him in a bigger sin. Therefore, there's really no sin at all. So, in case we didn't follow this, he said, hold it. If I give him food, I'm guilty of lifnei iver. But if I don't give him food, I'm guilty of lifnei iver. So which lifnei iver should I be guilty of? So he says it's certainly better to give him food because then we're not guilty of lifnei iver at all. And we have to pause for a second and say, well, why not? It sounds like both cases is lifnei iver. So I need to explain this because he didn't perhaps explain it. He's continued, says, Masha'enke b'nidan didan. In this case, Areza doma l'misha koteya etzma miraglo shel chaveru kedei latzil oto mikach miktiat kol hayad shelo. What if somebody has a very serious disease? Let's say has gangrene in a toe. So if you don't do anything, it will spread up the whole foot. In such a case, you have to cut off the part of the limb which is damaged. So he says, are you going to say that it's asur to do this? No, if you don't do this little round, it's going to have a much more severe effect. So that's really what he's doing over here, saying, you know, it's okay to do this, but why is it okay? Such a person is not guilty of doing nezek to the individual, he's helping the individual. It's not that we're doing a little bit of nezek, no. This is called a tikkun. Mitzvah hu deka avid velo avira. And this person is certainly doing a mitzvah and no sin at all. Kach gam kan eino chashuv kimichshol el adur abe kamaseu ze hu matzil to miavon chamor shel sinat torah v'lomdeha. You're saving somebody from a more serious sin. That's interesting. Who can decide which is more serious? Maybe eating food without a bracha is more serious. And he says the chenir de la fiat tzorich shaper reshai lekabed oto b'machalov mishteh. He goes, you have to do this. And I want to skip to the very end. So he notes in passing that the Chazon Ish disagrees with him. Which itself is interesting because what is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach saying? I don't care that the Chazon Ish, I mean, he notes it. Yes, the Chazon Ish doesn't agree with me on this, but it's okay, because this is what I think is right. So that itself should be an interesting tshuva. And I think what's most important about this tshuva, certainly being that I haven't explained it properly yet, is that it's completely unconvincing. Right? It's unconvincing because he says, well, he just created an interesting case. He goes, either it will be lifnei iver if I give him the food and he doesn't make a bracha, or it'll be lifnei iver if I don't give them the food, because then they're going to hate religious Jews. So both cases are lifnei iver. So if that's the case, then it's certainly not lifnei iver. Now, he doesn't explain why is that certainly not lifnei iver. I will explain this still. I'm leaving it deliberately, but I will explain it. V'haftarecha kamocha. But it's probably more than that. But he seems to be saying this person will become more distanced from a life of kedusha, more distanced from a philosophy, which is good. But I'm saying, you're right, because I could have said, hold it a second, but to give him food, he won't make a bracha, if that's not allowed, and certainly the Shulchan Aruch. Well, how is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? This is what's interesting. He knows the Chazon Ish disagrees with him, and he's totally convinced that he's right. He says it in a modest way, it would seem to me, and so on, but he's pretty confident in what he's saying. I'm saying, all the more so. If I weren't sure about something, and I know the Chazon Ish disagrees, so then I would certainly hesitate, but he doesn't do that. He puts forth and he says, no, there's no lifnei iver in such a case. But why not? He didn't explain it. He says, there's no lifnei iver. I know the Chazon Ish disagrees with me, but this is okay, and it's not lifnei iver, it's a mitzvah. Why? I'm just saying, this is what's problematic. Why? So, as I said, I think I know why, but I want to hold off for another moment or so. No, but then he flips. He says, okay, either way it's lifnei iver, right? But he says, because I have the other consideration, then this is not lifnei iver and it's a mitzvah. So how does he know that? I mean, that's really the question. And he doesn't really explain that. The second tshuva that we're going to see is somebody who slightly before, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who was known as the Sri Deyesh, source 17, you know, we don't like to give, you know, to rate our poskim, but the Sri Deyesh the truth is that if you've never read him, you've never learned him, he's absolutely a revelation, because he is a very, very clear thinker, and everything he says at the end of the day ends up being shot in the Gemara as well. He's not somebody that you feel this, I don't know, sometimes a convoluted thinking, very, very straight. He went through the Holocaust, which is actually why he called the book the Sri Deyesh, sort of survives. So I'm not going to read the whole tshuva, even though everything is related to it. But I want to go where it says Anaf Sheni, it's bolded, on the bottom towards the second half of page 4. Nira ki b'makom shehamachshil mitkaven lasot mitzvah, Ein din lifnei iver. Now, if you think about it, that was very close to what we just now saw by Rav Shlomo Zalman. Whether you say it's exact or not, but he comes out and says something very interesting. If I intend to do a mitzvah, it's not lifnei iver. Now, I need to explain this as well, but we're going to read, because there's some throughout a question. And what if I want to give the Nazir an opportunity to say Kiddush? Would he say such a thing? I don't believe he would. No, my intention is that he says Kiddush. So if my intention is that he says Kiddush, so then why? What's the problem here? Now, what I just now said, I don't believe is correct, but that's why I'm saying we still need to understand this. So let's read. Uv'ikar adin delifnei iver, regarding the very law of iver, lule mistafina. Sometimes it's written lule dimistafina. Anybody have any idea what that means? If I wouldn't be afraid, this is what a rabbi says. Sometimes they say lafi ani adate, according to my humble opinion. So sometimes they go and they say a little differently. They say lule mistafina or lule di mistafina, which would be the Aramaic. If I wouldn't be afraid, this is what I would say, which means what he's about to say is something which he thinks is perhaps radical, but he wants to put it out there. Lule mistafina mirabotenu gedolei achronim zal. If I were not afraid of what I've seen in certain achronim, hayiti omer, I would say the b'makom shamichsho mitkaven lasot mitzvah ein bizeh mishum lifnei iver. That where the person who's doing this believes they're doing something proper, then it can't be lifnei iver in such a case. Of course, the question is, why would that be? Where it's bolded a little bit lower down. Ulefize, tzorech loma mitzad asfara, shebemokom sheiz lefanav mitzvah la'asot, when a person has a mitzvah facing them, ein li manami mitzvah zu, you shouldn't stay away from the mitzvah, even though the other person may perhaps feel guilty of a sin, which means my intention is not in order to encourage or strengthen sinners. My intention is to fulfill a mitzvah. לראות את דרך המת בראותו שחברו משתדל לקיים מצוות בורו. I want the person to become closer to God. Which, by the way, the only thing surprising now is why Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't quote this, because it seems very close to what he had put out there. And he, and what's written there, Kaf Aleph, in the next couple of lines, Yesh lamdu mikan she'ein rilatet le'echol el lemisho deo bo she'ev arech v'nir shekevich metakabin lasot mitzvah she'notein v'tor tzedaka mutar. So if there's a poor guy on the street who's starving, I'm not saying dying, I don't want to get to the case of pikuach nefesh, and you want to give tzedakah, you want to give him, and you give him some food, right? If you want to make it more dramatic, you're afraid if you give him money, he's going to go buy cigarettes or buy drugs. So you want to give him a sandwich, but you don't know if he's going to say bracha. So that's it, I can't do it. He says, no, I can do it. Why? But it's lefnei iver. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, I can't give this guy food if he's not going to say bracha. He goes, no, you're not intending to put a stumbling block. You're intending to do a mitzvah. So, but again, how do you know that that's okay? But now you realize what we saw by Rav Shlomo Zalman is really precisely over here. And I'm going to skip a little bit more. Go to the next page. The main sin, and now he's really dealing with the drabanan of lufnei iver, misayeya, is that you're helping sinners. I will imafsid mamono im besira, and we'll skip a little bit more. Va'ain bistei chemed, and kafchet. Umikol ha'amor, from everything I've written in the last, and we skipped most of it, so we're just getting right to the conclusion. Yesh tshuva l'kama she'elot hanogot bedin lifnei iver, kigon. Now I have to, before I read the following, I have to tell you a terrible, terrible secret. You want to hear it? It's a terrible secret. When you hear it, you will either say, oh, that makes a lot of sense, or be totally outraged. Right? You ready? There are nice religious Orthodox rabbis who, if they perform a wedding for a non-religious couple, will deliberately make the wedding not kosher. They'll deliberately make the wedding not kosher. Why would they? You're looking at me like I'm crazy, right? Right? Why would they do this? Because they figure that if they're not religious, so it's going to end up being that she'll end up cheating on him, or it's going to end up being that if they get divorced, they never really will get a get, they'll just get separated. And they just figure that you want to be more specific, that she's not really going to go to mikvah afterwards. So therefore, by performing the wedding, you're being guilty of lifnei iver. So therefore, it's better to passel the wedding than to make the wedding kosher. You like this or you don't like this? No, that's why it's a secret, I told you. Are you outraged? Right. And therefore, any rabbi who does this can't charge money for the wedding. If they charge for the wedding, they're taking money for doing something, right? They're stealing. Any rabbi who does this is stealing. Now, when I... You're shocked. You know what? But I'm still happy. I can still shock you guys sometimes. This is good. This is good. This is good. So do you at least find this interesting? So look now at the next line of this Rideyesh. U'mikol amor yesh tshuva l'kama she'elot anagot b'din lefnei iver k'gon mutar l'sader kiddushin l'anashim she'enu zirim b'isur nida. Am I allowed to perform a wedding if there's going to be a couple that are not going to keep Torah Mishpacha? Or mutar l'shadchan l'zaveg zivugim shelo itnagu al pi dinei Torah. Are you allowed to introduce people? You didn't know that we have some extreme people in our religion? No one ever told you this? I know a guy who years and years ago, I bumped into him, and in a Beit Midrash in Yerushalayim, and he had this look on his face as if like somebody died. I said, what's the matter? He goes... The guy was single. He invited lots and lots of singles in New York to come to a Friday night dinner. Over the years, I'm not going to say thousands, probably tens of thousands of people that he's invited to dinner, young professionals, and many, many shidduchim have come out of these Friday night dinners. And he thinks so. He did a wonderful thing. So he went to a shadchanit, and she asked him, what do you do? So he says, oh, I'm in finance. So she says, oh, very, very nice. And you know, and what else to do? Well, I do volunteer work with Jewish organizations, very nice. And what kind of work do you do? So he says, I invite singles to come and, so she goes, really, what kind of singles? She goes, well, non-religious people that have a Friday night dinner. And then he says proudly, and yatsa mizeh, harbe harbe shiduchim, right? And many, many, many people met, and dozens of people have gotten married. And she looks at him and she says, no, that's asur. He goes, why is it asur? She goes, because they're non-religious. If they're non-religious, they're not going to keep Tara Mishpacha. It's lifnei iver. You're not going to introduce non-religious people. So just in case you're not sure what I'm going to say in the next minute or two, okay? I'm sorry that I'm so predictable that you know what I'm going to say. But the Sri Deish says, and this is a response to the people who think it's lifnei iver to perform a wedding by people who may not keep Tara Mishpacha. O imutar l'chadchan le'zivug zivugim, or to introduce people. Why? Because in all of these cases, you are intending to do a mitzvah. So if you're intending to do a mitzvah, then it's not lifnei iver. Now, I've so far have brought Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and now I've brought in the Sri Deish, and we still don't know why this is. We know that they've said it. And by the way, I'll tell you another thing. You know that he's right. Yes? You know that he's right. You just don't know why he's right, but you know that he's right. And as you correctly said, so therefore, if we're not allowed to perform weddings for non-religious Jews, and we're not allowed to introduce them one to another, so therefore, they should all non-religious Jews should just marry non-Jews, because that's better. And you know that that's not the case, so there's something very wrong over here, so now we just have to figure out still a little bit more. Now, source 18 is great. Source 18 is by, well, maybe it's by Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. Maybe. It's really not, but I have to explain. Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, who I have a great picture of the two of us under a chuppah someplace, I performed a wedding and he showed up. The guy who wrote the Ruviot Ephraim, he showed up by the wedding. And it was very interesting to meet him. Ephraim Greenblatt was a huge Talmud Chacham, who was born in Yerushalayim, went to America to learn with who he determined was the Gadol HaDor, Rav Moshe Feinstein, to do Shemesh by him, to learn how to become a posek. And after a year or so with Rav Moshe sent him off to Memphis, Tennessee, where he was for the next, I don't know how many years, and he was like the posek. And later on, he had a relative named Nota Greenblatt, and basically anything having to do with Jewish life in that part of America, River Frank Greenblatt was involved. And he also, many of the Tshuvot of Rav Moshe are written to River Frank Greenblatt. So, but he wrote his own, this is Chelek Zion of his Chelot and Tshuvot, so you now realize that there are many, many, many volumes of it. Yeah, that's a good question, because the bracha will be bracha alav atala. They make sure that there's not kosher witnesses. Yeah, that's a problem. I'll tell you the truth. Can I tell you the truth? I've never done one of these, so I don't know what to say. Okay, I apologize. I try to make them kosher when I do them, so I haven't yet figured out how they do this. But if you want, I can try to find out. Listen, it's a good way out afterwards. Like, if you listen, you're not sure if you want to marry somebody. Listen, so you hire the rabbi. What? No. But you're not sure. So you hire the right rabbi. You say, listen, I don't want you to do this 100% kosher. And anytime you want to walk away, you can walk away. You like that or no? Okay, we're not going to go there. Should I say this when I teach a boys' class, or I shouldn't say this? Because so back to Rav Ephraim Greenblatt. He did something over here incredible. I remember when the rumor came out. It started as a rumor. Somebody went to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and asked him, can we invite guests? Oh, we're back to our topic now. Can we invite guests to come for a Friday night? And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach answered yes, but there were conclusions, and he wrote a letter, and he wrote a tshuva. The only problem is that unlike the tshuva that we saw, where he talked about inviting somebody to come over, or a guest who came, can you give him something to eat or drink, which was the problem of Ne'iver, in terms of brachot, but the one in terms of Shabbat, he never published. It didn't come up in any of his Shelot and Tshuvot, he didn't publish it, so apparently he felt that this should be suppressed, as we're about to see. So Rav Ephraim Greenblatt decided that this would be a great idea to publish it because it's a very important tshuva. Now, part of what's really interesting about this is that he was really a Talmud Muvhak, right? I don't know how to say that in English. A dedicated disciple, perhaps the disciple, of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who we already saw what his opinion was, and now he publishes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who's going to say something very, very different, and he's the one who reveals in print, because as I said, the letter went around, people in Yerushalayim got a cut. I had seen a copy, a number of people's copies, a photocopy, people had seen it, but Rav Shlomo Zalman did not want it publicized. So after Rav Shlomo Zalman passed away, let's take it up from the start of source 18, Rivivelt Ephraim, Arachayim, Chelek Zayin, If you want to actually see the page, you can find it on Hebrew books. You can find the exact page. And he writes, Tshuva me'arav agon of Shlomo Zalman Ori Baruch Zatzal v'yeh lezichrat nishmato hakdosha v'shizchuto tagenu neinu amen ken yehi ratzon. And he writes, may this be cause an iloy nishmato, which is very funny, because again, Rav Shlomo Zalman did not want this published, and he publishes, and it says this is in his memory. So you have to love that. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Po Ira Kodesh Yerushalayim, so on and so forth. Yom Dalad Nisan Tisameach, Tav Shin Samech, Tav Sin Mem Chet. L'chvod Yedidi, U'mechvodi, so on and so forth. Chever Hanhalat Yeshivat Or Sameach, Bira Kodesh. So Or Sameach is a yeshiva that deals with Balei Tshuva. And they have various branches as well that deal with Balei Tshuva. Hineni mashiv lo bezeh bekitzer al ha-she'elot shechvodo hitzig befanai bekesher lenihul minyan tfila avur rechokim shirotzim lekarev otam l'Torah mitzvot. Regarding making a minyan for people who are not religious, right? Now, you all know what Rav Moshe is going to say. What are you talking about? You're a mesit. It's lefneiver. Al yidei hishtatfutam b'sidrei tfila. Uvehistamecha l'sefer ha-chashuv milamed lehoil, simen kavtet, Shivimi harbeg dole ol makel bezem chale shabbat shebezmenin shaim kein shaim kein tinokot shenishbu. Now I didn't go back to bring you the Malamed Lehoil, but he also is quite interesting. This is Rav Dovid Tzvi Hoffman, who was the head of the Beit Midrash in Germany, where actually this Rida Eish learned. So it's interesting that there may be a particular approach. Rav Dovid Tzvi Hoffman was one of the first ones, not the first, because even before him, also in Germany, we have Rav Yaakov Etlinger beforehand, dealing with the new situation of the new Mechalalei Shabbat, which means it used to be in the old days, if you were Mechalal Shabbat, you were basically totally alien, it's an attack to the Jewish religion. But, you know, let's just be honest, in today's world, there are people that are Mechalal Shabbat and say Kiddush. Right, a lot of what we call them in Israel is Masorati. A lot of people that sit, they'll have a Friday night dinner, and the kids or the grandchildren will drive over, and the wife will light candles, maybe after Shkia, and the father is going to say Kiddush and put like a little thing on his head to say Kiddush, and they're going to. So how could you? I mean, that's part of the whole question. As I said, this goes back to Yaakov Etlinger. How could it be that somebody can say Kiddush, which is Eidut? That God, it's testimony. God created heaven and earth, but at the same time, the guy's Mechalal Shabbat, which according to Rashi, at least, understanding the Gemara, is a Eidut that God didn't create, right? If you're Mechalal Shabbat, you say God didn't create heaven and earth, but this guy's saying Kiddush. And so we live in a much more complicated world. So already we find, he quotes the Malamed Lehoil, Rav Dovid Tzvi Hoffman, who, by the way, aside from being a world-class biblical scholar and Talmudic scholar, I mean, if you've ever seen his commentary on Vayikra, it's also Shemot and Dvarim. Just because Nechama Leibowitz often quotes him as Hoffman, right, doesn't mean that he was a world-class posek. So, and he was, and also just as an aside, his family later on censored him. There's one tshuva where somebody asks about, are you obligated to wear a kippah, right? So, he says that the first time he came to Berlin and he met with Rav Shimon Froel Hirsch, that when they sat down to talk about politics or whatever it was, worldly things, that Rav Hirsch insisted that he take off his yarmulke. He says, in Germany, it's not considered to be polite. So he said, the two of them, he was sitting, he said, testimony, I was sitting with Rav Shimon Froel Hirsch without a yarmulke on, and then we started talking Torah, so then he put his yarmulke on, so I put mine back on as well. So don't worry, if you look for this in any of the new volumes of the Malamed Lehoil, it's not there. It was censored out. But that tshuva is there. So over here of Shlomo Zalman, as being quoted by Rabbi Greenblatt, but again, it's the direct quote of the tshuva, he says, already we find in the tshuva of Rav Dovid Tzvi Hoffman that this new generation of Mechalei Shabbat, they're now at war with Judaism. It's just that they were raised differently. They were raised the Tinuk Shem and Nishba. Again, Shevim Erbe Gdol Eolam Lakel Bezeb Mechalei Shabbat Shevizmein Shehem Kein Tinukot Shenishbu. They're like kids who were kidnapped. And certainly when your intention is to bring them closer to Torah and to Yirat Shemayim, therefore it seems to me very simple as follows, and then he sets down a number of guidelines. Aleph. Mutar lezmen gam mi shegar rachok mimakom ha'tefilah. You can even invite somebody who lives far away. You can invite him, or from a place to stay. Even if he doesn't accept the invitation, you're not obligated to tell him not to come. You've done your thing, you're inviting him. Now, I can stop and say, hold it a second. By the way, you all realize Rav Moshe Feinstein would not agree. He says, invite them, and even if they don't accept it, it's okay. Now, why? Why is that okay? They're going to sin because of you. So obviously, as we see, he doesn't agree. But you don't have to warn them and say, you're not allowed to come by car, which is your core of Moshe. Said, of course you have to tell them they can't come by car. Okay, bet. He says, yeah, you can invite them, but make sure that they're not parking in the shul's parking lot. You know, park a block or two away. Gimel. Ratsui. It's preferable not to count somebody for a minyan who is still a mechal Shabbat b'farhesya. That's also will be important what that means, but I'm not going to define it more than that. Dalid. I'll say in passing. The Mishnah Berurah says that if you're mechal Shabbos b'farhesya, but you're embarrassed in front of somebody, if somebody would walk by, then you're not going to say mechal Shabbos. I once had a neighbor who, what he's saying is true, he, a long time ago, he learned by the Chazon Ish, became completely non-religious. He married a woman who never was at a woman from a secular kibbutz who never was at a Pesach Seder in her life, like until she was like 60-something years old. So he told me once, he knew Rabbi Levine, as a kid, he knew Rabbi Levine. So he says that once Rabbi Levine saw him on Shabbos, he had a cigarette in his hand, so he went and he put out the cigarette, so he put it out. So Rabbi Levine said to him, you know, you shouldn't do that because of me. Obviously, he was worried because he was putting out because of him. So I said to him, oh, you're embarrassing for, he goes, Rabbi Levine, how come Mechal Shabbos is for Rabbi Levine? I said, okay, according to the Mishnah Berurah, you're not a Mechal Shabbos for Hesya. He goes, what are you talking about? Because he was proud of this. I said, you're embarrassed in front of Rabbi Levine. So you're not a Mechal Shabbos for Hesya. You're just a Mechal Shabbos. You're not as bad as you thought you were. So he was very taken aback. We actually had a wonderful relationship, which is itself is amusing, but we were neighbors and we had some kelim that were jointly owned and he would not use them on Shabbat because he knew that I wouldn't be happy if he used it. But so he kept Shabbat with my kelim where I would jointly owned kelim. Anyway, Dalid, im yesh asarak sherim biladam efshar lekor oto gam lalot l'torah ul'harshot l'kohen lalot l'duchan b'rachat kohanim. So you see Rav Shlomo Zalman is going straight to technical things. I mean, he's already past the point of inviting them and he's going to technical things. Can be part of the minyan? Can they have an aliyah? They can have an aliyah. Can a kohen get up and bless? They can. And he writes, v'hineni chotein b'rachash noten ha'torah yehei be'ezratchem l'karev livotehem shel Yisrael avinu shebashamayim. Now, here's a tshuva that he wrote. It's a tshuva, but he would not publicize it. Shlomo Zalman would not publicize it, and he chose not to publish it, so it was published. There is one more tshuva that I want to get to today. No, he writes here. He writes this. I'm saying I saw this before he published this. I knew it. I mean, this is the only place to find it in print. Maybe other people since then have published it. But this was now the prime place to find it because the Ruvi Vota Freyim, Rabbi Frank Greenblatt, decided to publish it. Yes, he felt that only people that are osek in such things and kirev rechokim and really understand what they're doing should have this knowledge. He did not feel that this should be public knowledge because he felt that this would be misused, 100%. Yeah, the world has changed. I once wrote an article which is called Halacha and the Internet, which deals with that as well, among some other things. Okay, so now we see that what Shlomo Zalman said about handing the guy the food is really consistent to what he says by our case as well, and it's just not just a question of me making an extension, but we realize that to more or less, though we haven't seen inside, that the David Tzvi Hoffman also is in the same direction. We know that the Sri Deish is in the same direction, but we still don't understand exactly what it is that they know that perhaps we still don't know. I'll just tell you quickly about the Rabbi Greenblatt. There was once I performed a wedding. Somebody called me from New York and said they met somebody. She was 40-something. She doesn't like me saying that, by the way. But she was 40-something at the time. And he was not religious. And she told me that he's a mensch and he's a nice fellow and whatever. And I said, and they want to come to Israel in 2 weeks. Can I perform the wedding? So I said, if we do it through the Rabbanut, it's going to, which I have to by law, it's very hard to do something. And it was like right before Tisha B'Av, they're about to close, and you need 2 weeks at least. So I said, he's coming in a couple of days. I said, okay, when he comes, bring a letter from the rabbi, anybody knows the family, of the parents, ksuva, everything you can bring, please bring. So she sends him off. We get to the Rabbanut. It's like open like from 8 to 12. We get to 12:01. So, of course, it's closed. So we knock on the door, and the guy says, we're closed. So I say, well, I have a wedding. He's getting married in 10 days. They say, impossible. You need 2 weeks. So I asked, I said, is Rabbi Ralbag there? He was like the person who sits in the office behind everybody there. They said, yeah. I said, I need to speak to Rabbi Ralbag. So for some reason, the guy says, fine, and lets us in. So I go to there, knock on the door, and I tell him a little bit of the story. And just to add a little bit more, the fellow's name is Landau. And like the first thing when she told me she engaged with somebody named Landau, I said to her, I said, is he from the family known to be Yehuda? Yehuda means the family name is Landau. And was a Levi. And she said, no, there's no rabbis in his family, whatever. So when I go into Rabbi Ralbag, I introduce him, whatever, and I say that this guy's name is Landau. And he says also, oh, maybe he's from the Nodi B'Yehuda. So he goes, no. Like, I don't know. So he then hands me, I said, did he bring anything? He says, yeah, I have a letter from this. And he goes, I have a letter from my rabbi. I go, so who's your rabbi? So he says, Rabbi Greenblatt. So it's Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. So both of us know who Rabbi Greenblatt is. He doesn't really know who it is. So like on the stationery, you know, the guy who wrote the review of Ephraim and so on. So he hands us the letter and he writes. He goes, I performed his parents' wedding. I was the mohel by his brit. He's Jewish and he's single and it's okay if he gets married. And you should know that he's ben achar ben achar ben from the Nodeb Yehuda. Right? So that's what he writes in the thing. So even though we got there late, Rabbi Ralbag just arranged everything for us, and the wedding ended up taking place in less than 2 weeks. And Rabbi Greenblatt showed up for the wedding. That was also the other thing. He showed up for the wedding. So I called her up, and I told her that somehow he must have some schut avot, because, the Rabbanut, which is not always the easiest people to work with, they opened up not during hours, and they let us do this in less than 2 weeks. And, went straight to the head, and b'seder, akol yeh b'seder. So, and I said, oh, on top of that, also, I said, I read the letter from Rabbi Greenblatt. This guy is ben achar ben achar ben from the Nodeb Yehuda. So she goes, who's in Nodeb Yehuda? So I said, when the Vilna Gaon was sitting in Vilna, all of the important questions came. The Posek Hador, what they would call, came to the Nodeb Yehuda. Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, who was the rabbi of Prague. So she goes, okay, great, cool. Calls me back a half an hour later. She goes, you won't believe this. I said, what? So she said, a couple of months ago, a friend of mine, we're both single in our 40s, and we decided to go, together with Rebbetzin Youngreis, decided to go and to pray by some Kivrei Tzadikim. She goes, I have a picture of my praying and crying in front of the grave, the Nodeb Yehuda, asking him to find me a shidduch. Is that a good story? So let's now go on to, I told you, so you don't get upset with me, we finally have to go to South Africa now. South Africa. Okay, so that's source 19, Tshuvot V'Hanagot, from Rav Moshe Sternbach. Now, those of you who don't know who Rav Moshe Sternbach is, Rav Moshe Sternbach is an absolute genius. He's alive today. He's an elderly man. He was born in London. So we can get London in here as well. He was born in London, lives in Israel, spent many years in South Africa. He wrote books called Moadim V'Zmanim. Moadim V'Zmanim is it's a caricature of any kind of Torah halacha books. When I say it's a caricature, you know, like they would make fun of people in Bnei Brak, they're always trying to find a new chumrah. He writes in his introduction that the purpose of learning halacha is to find a new chumrah that no one else ever thought of before. It is the most machmir book that you've ever seen in your life, because he's trying, which means he figures out you need to eat more matzah than the Chazon Ish thought you needed to. And even when somebody proves to him that he's wrong, he goes, okay, but it's anyway, it's a mitzvah once a year. How can he not be machmir? And his neshama is a neshama of things you have to be machmir wherever you possibly can. So I say all that by introduction because that's the way he is in his book that he wrote when he was younger. He goes to South Africa and he becomes a rabbi of the most extreme group over there, and he has lots of shelot and tshuvot. And in his shelot and tshuvot, he ends up becoming the most lenient posek that you can possibly imagine. There are tshuvot that he has here that I can't even tell you. I mean, it's bad enough for what I've already told you today. There's tshuvot here that I can't tell you. The world would fall apart if I told you. I'm not kidding. Some of the things that he has in his shelot and tshuvot. But he probably has more tshuvot about Bali Tshuva than anybody else because, can you tell them? Because there are so many families of Bali Tshuva in South Africa, especially in Johannesburg. So he writes, She'ela. Now, when he writes the She'ela, he describes the She'ela, he doesn't tell you the She'ela. We'll read his description, and then we'll figure out what really happened. She'ela. Ben Bal Tshuva, so there's a kid, a son, who's a Bal Tshuva, Mazmin Horav, L'su'udat Lel Shabbat, V'yodeya She'achziru L'beitam V'mechonit, There's a son who invites his parents, and they drive every Friday, no, not every, he invites them Friday night to come at Friday night dinner, and they will drive home afterwards. And the son says, and this is what's bringing them closer to God and to religion. Rak shechoshesh, but he's afraid, b'mashe machshilam l'chalel Shabbat. He's afraid that he is guilty of being machshilotam. He's guilty of lifnei ivelo titen michshol, that he is causing them to sin. Now, my suspicion is that he would invite them, and some other firm person said, you can't do that. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote that it's asur. You're a mesit. You're causing them to sin. You can't do this. I'm guessing that that's part of the question, either implied or said explicitly. Avo mi'idach, but on the other hand, him belav hachim mechalim Shabbat below chvat lehem. On the other hand, if they weren't driving to him, they'd be driving someplace else. So they don't keep Shabbat. Rak tikvato shelaat laat yitkarvu. His hope is that slowly they will become religious or come closer. Uldvarav kvar roeh hitkadmut sheyesh etzlam kvar gisha acheret ledat. And he says, over the time, he already sees the parents have moved a bit and have a different attitude towards religion. And he believes it's because he invites them, even though they drive afterwards. And maybe, nonetheless, this is prohibited because of lifnei iver. So I think that, you know, as clearly as anybody has defined our question, we have it over here by Rav Sternbach. Nira, it seems, she is so isur lifnei iver who domia de iver shemach shilo, that when is it lifnei iver, that when there's somebody blind and you're causing them to sin? Aval in kavanato rak l'tovat atzmo lo nikra machshil. But if it's for another reason, l'tovat atzmo, it's really for that person, it's good for them, then it's not called a stumbling block. Elu kamoshe rofe minateach lo nikra makah chaveru, that if somebody does some kind of surgery, you're not going to say that he is somebody who attacked or caused nezek. He's somebody who's helping. Kach kan halo ein kavanato lahara lo ulia etz lo etz sasha ein hogenet. Over here as well, it's not that he's trying to do bad or to give him bad advice. Ela shemekavebze lahadrichamu lekervat laderech amet. He wants to bring them closer, instruct them, and bring them towards the truth. Umasha chaveiro mechalel Shabbat ayadeze enu ela oser ra'al laatzmecha ulachain beze isur lifnei iver. And the fact that the person is mechalel Shabbat, that's their problem and not yours. Now we don't know why that is still. Vekevan she'enu mitzave otam linsoa. He didn't tell them to drive. Adaraba. Opposite is true. Hodia lehem shemitzta'er b'kach. He's told them that he's really, it pains him that they drive. Two ein kan chiyuv arvut lahaf shiram b'machalalei Shabbat b'farhesia. At that point, then there's no longer would be considered to be a mutual responsibility in terms of separating them from publicly desecrating Shabbat. He's done enough. V'yalkeinir shagam isur lefne'iver ein b'zeh shekavanatam l'tobatam. It's therefore not lefne'iver because he has a mind for their good. So I still have to explain this. Amnam chilul Hashem yesh kan. There is, however, a chilul Hashem. Shabbaim lebeito b'machonit b'farhesia be'etzem yom haShabbat. That they're driving on Shabbat. L'chein yesh l'rot sha'al kol panim. We have to, they should make sure. Lo yechanu et machonitam Samech lebeito b'makom shiragishu shabo miyuchad etzlo. They should park a little while away that people can't tell that they're coming to Spitzel Vim. Ki ba'avon chilul Hashem echad shogeg v'chad meizid ve'in tului b'mashe mechavein latov. Because we're talking about chilul Hashem, then it doesn't make a difference what your intention is. V'nira sheyishtadel k'fi kuchol limna otam b'chilul Shabbat. You should try as much as you can. Aval imze yifshar umagish sheyesh b'zeh to'el lachziram l'mutav. But on the other hand, if he feels that the way things are going now is good, don't hesitate, don't stop what you're doing. Raki karevo tam kafi efshar, bring them close as you can. Usmol dochev yamin mekarevet, if you do push them away a little bit, it's with the left hand, the stronger, the right hand brings them closer, as the Gemara says. Vizaher v'yodia utam tamid chomir chilul Shabbat, as much as you can tell them about serious breaking Shabbat is mitikun shmira, v'zirat Hashem itbarach, yechzir otam lemutav. And v'zirat Hashem, you're going to succeed. And there's no kind of kibbut av v'aim as strong as this, as inviting your parents to drive on Shabbat to come and have Friday night dinner with you. So that really is a remarkable tshuva. But you do notice along the way, he had very little argumentation in terms of sources and so on. He sort of said, this is what it seems. He then says, v'makom acher, heveti midivrei ha-mishnah berurah b'sheir tzion, simon shin vav, sifkat mem dalid. Now, this is going to be interesting because he's about to go on much more of an offensive than you can possibly imagine. So before we read any further or realize what it is that he's saying, I want to explain a little bit more, but I just want to read the next line, the middle of the line, umashma, you don't know what his proof is, shezeu chova miyuchedet bikrovin, that not only is this allowed, it may be actually be an obligation. He just now turned this invitation to invite them Friday night into being allowed. He turned this into, this may be an obligation to do what you're doing. Lafiza near lafiyat aiti ta afshe ba alma b'machal shabav esher she'in osa maasech maasei amcha b'turin lo chichu k'mor b'mishnah brura, and so on. Mikol makom ba'aviv shenotah ben akam chayiv l'go alo. You have to help your father. V'sibat ha'chiyuv einu rak mitzad staka shachem l'kol ani Yisrael elodim gu'ulat l'krovin. There's some special halacha which he hasn't explained to us, or maybe he did, but I didn't read it all, that what we're doing over here is actually doing something unbelievably good. Now, this was the most aggressive tshuva that we've seen, so I need to break everything down for us. First of all, I want to explain what I have not explained yet today. I believe that all the sources that we've seen have one thing in mind. And the only thing which is a little remarkable is that nobody said it. So I'm going to say it. And once I say it, then it will make sense. Remember I said in passing that if you have in mind to do a mitzvah, then it's okay. So if I want the Nazir to say Kiddush, so I can give him wine. No, that's not the case. Remember last time how I ended the last class, I asked you a question to think about. What was the question I asked you to think about? So it's okay. It's been a long time, and you've thought about many other things. I don't know, what do you do when you don't sit? What do you do when you think? You don't think, okay. That's why you have to daven. So you can be distracted and think about something else. Okay, good. So the question I asked you was that we had seen that there's two types of lifnei iver. One type of lifnei iver is to facilitate, to give somebody something which is not allowed. The other type of lifnei iver is to give somebody bad advice. That was the Rashi on the Pasuk and the Chumash. You tell somebody from the Sifra, tell somebody you should sell something because you really want the field, you're giving a bad advice for your own selfish motives. And over there, the Torah is, what is Rashi trying to explain? Or I can put it differently. Why did Rashi, in his Perush on the Chumash, bring that Lifnei Iver and not bring the other type about the, what's Lifnei Iver? Lifnei Iver is when there's a Nazir on an island and you have the ferry with the wine and you bring the wine. Why did Rashi not explain that? So if I'm not mistaken, Rashi was concerned that the Pasuk said, at the end of the Pasuk, what does it say? V'yareitum elokecha. Yireitu lekecha is that God knows what your intentions are. So if God knows what your intentions are, so I want to go back a second. Let's say I tell you to sell this field, sell this stock, sell this thing, and I think it's a good idea, and you end up losing money on that. Was I guilty on lifnei iver? Why? But it was bad advice. So am I guilty on lifnei iver? No. So what did you say? Because my intentions were good. So therefore, what is the modifier? Lifnei iver lo titen nechsho v'yareitim elokecha. So v'yareitim elokecha is the modifier. That means that when I give advice, I have to give advice which I think is good advice, and who's the one who judges? God is the one who judges. What if my advice turned out to be bad advice? That's not what it says. So therefore, Rashi chose to use that explanation. The guy has a field, you advise him to sell the field because you want the field. That's bad advice. Why? Because God knows what's really your thoughts on. So Rashi was trying to explain the pasuk properly, so he brought that application of Lifnei Iver. But that we just now made a lot of progress. Did you realize that? When it comes to giving a nazir wine, it doesn't make a difference what my intention is, which means this whole issue of intention has nothing to do with when I give him wine, when I give the Iver Min HaChai to the non-Jew, which means when I actually facilitate the sin, that has nothing to do with intention. On the other hand, the second type of Lifnei Iver, which is bad advice for somebody, or, and I want to say anything which is going to follow from that, then suddenly what my intention is makes a very big difference. So now along the way, if we think back, can I give this person, and this is interesting, because you can say, hold it, this is very subtle. Can I give this person food and drink? Hold it, I can't give him food and drink, because then the guy's not going to make a bracha. No, my concern over here is that I want to bring this person closer and not alienate him from Judaism. Okay, it's not Lifnei Iver. But what happened to Lifnei Iver? No, so apparently, and I know that it's subtle what I'm saying here. Let me go to the other case, the Sri Deish. How can I perform a wedding that she may not go to mikveh afterwards? No, my intention is to bring kedusha into these people's lives. So then it's allowed. Which means automatically, once my intention is, you know, I'm going to say it a little differently. I can look at micro concerns and macro considerations. So I could say, at a micro level, maybe somebody's going to do something which is wrong. But if my macro consideration over here is to bring them closer, so then it's not Lifnei Iver. I want to go back and bring it to our case, which we already saw both from Shlomo Zalman, and now we saw it again from Rav Sternbach. And it's very simple to them. It's so simple to them that nobody bothered to explain this. If there's a family, and I've been asked this question a number of times, if there's a family, and this is despite the concern that you're not allowed to say these things out loud. There's a family that has a couple of children. And one child doesn't keep Shabbat, and the other children do. So do I write that child off completely and say, that's it? Or do I say, listen, I'd rather that they have whatever level of Kedusha they can have, and I invite them come, even though I know that they may drive afterwards, or they may go out Friday night, or they may just go back home, or whatever it is. Am I allowed to invite them? So what would my answer be? My answer would be, it depends. If my reason for inviting them is because I think it's nice for the whole family to sit around the table, then I'm going to say, not necessarily, but probably stronger than that. But if I say is that my intention is that I think that sitting around the table with the whole family, that feel that they're still connected, feel a part of it, and the kedusha could affect them, and maybe that will bring them closer, then I would say absolutely yes. Why? Because there's no isser. Why is there no isser? What happened to Lifnei Iver? So Lifnei Iver depends on what my intention is. What's the isser that I did? I invited them. So is that closer to giving wine, or is that closer to giving advice? That's advice. Did I give them good advice or bad advice? Well, that depends. If I gave them advice just because I don't care that they're Mechal Shabbat, then maybe I gave them bad advice. If I invited them because I think this is spiritually good for them, then I gave them good advice. Now, I understand the reason why Shlomo Zalman did not want to publish this, because now we're leaving it up to the person who's going to be doing the inviting. What's your intention? So he's going to say, okay, only people who are quote-unquote curious professionals should know this, because their intention hopefully will be a good intention, because they really want to help this person. But when it broke down to a particular family, not somebody who's a quote-unquote Kier professional, a family in South Africa who became religious, can I keep on inviting my parents over? So what does Sternberg say? Absolutely you can. And the first reason is why? Because there's no Lifnei Iver in this case. Why? Because you want to do something which is for the good. Your intention is something which is positive. So now, when I look at Lifnei Iver, and I'm going back to the category of Lifnei Iver, which is one of advice, so now what was my advice? My advice is, what was my purpose? What was my intention? My intention is to bring more kedusha in this person's life, then it's not Lifnei Iver. So therefore, again, I can call this a macro consideration as opposed to a micro issue, but I'm not sure even if it's the right definition in terms of micro and macro. It's more than that. It's that if my intention was to help this person, so then it's not Lifnei Iver. And that's really what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, even in the case of giving them food, because my intention is that I want to alienate this person. So therefore, why was that important? Because he seems to think that this, even though I'm going to say it again, you could have argued that maybe this is the other type of Lifnei Iver. He seems to believe that I look at the larger situation and say, I want to bring this person closer to Judaism, so therefore it can't be Lifnei Iver in such a case. Because my concern is about this individual. But this certainly will work within the cases of the Sri Deish, right? And it certainly works within the case of the way that Rav Rav Sternbach said it. Now, the other thing that he said in passing that we didn't necessarily catch is something which is found in the Shulchan Aruch, which comes from, if I'm not mistaken, a tshuva of the Rashba. Source number 20. Now, this may come as a little bit of a surprise, but before I read it, I'm going to ask you a question. If somebody is in a situation of pikuach nefesh, right, are you allowed to break Shabbat to save a life by pikuach nefesh? What if it's not pikuach nefesh? Can you break Shabbat to save their life? So the answer is yes. First of all, the answer is yes. Why? Because it doesn't have to be pikuach nefesh to save somebody's life. It's suffik pikuach nefesh. Recently, one of the heads of Zaka have decided that they want to ask me some of the questions that come up with... last Friday night. There was a terrorist attack Friday night. Jerusalem, a soldier was killed. Three terrorists were killed. So the guy comes over to me. I think it was maybe right after Mincha, right before coming, probably but during Yedid Nefesh. He came over to me and he said that he said there was an attack. I hadn't heard about it before Shabbat. And he said there were three dead mechablim. And he said, can I send a Zaka ambulance? I said, why should he get involved in it? Let the police, whatever, why do you have to deal with it? He says, we'll get there quicker. I said, what are you concerned about? He said, I'm concerned that rioting will take place, that if you leave the bodies there, rioting will take place. And I said, so you're saying that you think there's a suffix sakana pekoch nefesh? He said, yes. I said, fine, send an ambulance. Okay, you're surprised. That's the halakha. The halakha is not cases of pekoch nefesh. We break Shabbat for suffix pekoch nefesh. Okay, so now I'm going to start all over again. What if there's no pikuach nefesh whatsoever? There's no safek pikuach nefesh, but there is pikuach neshama. Okay, well, I want to back up a little bit. What's the reason that we break Shabbat to save a life? So you're going to say, yeah. So the Gemara gives five different reasons. The best reason the Gemara gives is you break one Shabbat, they can keep more Shabbatot. It's the best reason. Now, what if somebody is in danger spiritually, but they're not in danger physically? Can you break Shabbat if somebody's in danger spiritually? Right. So let's read the Shulchan Aruch. Source 20, Siman Shin Vav Sif Yudalit. Misha Shelchulo. Now this was a particular case, which is why it's written in this fashion. Somebody got a message, Shehutzi Bitomi Beito B'Shabbat, that his daughter was taken, kidnapped or went by her own volition, but she was taken, Lohutziyu Miklal Yisrael. And she will now be either converted... Islam, converted Christianity, that's what's going to happen. Mitzvah lasum l'derech pa'amav l'shtadel b'hatzalata. It's a mitzvah to go out to try and save her. By the way, do you like that? To try to save her. V'yotzei afilu chutz l'shalosh parsot v'ilo boi kaifinan lei. And if the guy doesn't want to do it, you make him do it. Now this is what Rav Sternbach quoted as well. That if somebody, again, that's the particular case of the Rashba. The Rashba's case that he was asked about is that somebody was told that a family member, the case was a daughter, who was kidnapped or taken on Shabbat. I'm not worried about pikuach nefesh. I'm not worried, but I'm worried about her soul. That the people that took her are going to convert her and take her to another religion. Am I allowed to break Shabbat to save her? So what did it say in the Shulchan Aruch? I'm allowed to break Shabbat to try to save her. Not only that, he says, if the guy doesn't want to go, you make him go. So what did Rav Sternbach just now do with this? What did Rav Sternbach do with this halacha? Let's go back and read his the part that I sort of skipped over. The second paragraph, top of the page, V'mokom acher heveti midivrei Mishnah Berurah b'Shaar Tzion, Siman Shin Vav, Sifka Mem Dalet, Sha'av chayav l'dog l'bito shelo tishtamed shehu ge'ula the karuv law. A father has an obligation to his child, to his daughter, to save them spiritually. Umashma zeu chovat miyuchedet bikrovim. So it sounds like that there's a special law to save those that are closest to you. Ulefi zen nir lefi yedaiti da'af sheba'alma b'chal sheba'fasir she'enu oser and so on and so forth. Turin, which maybe in other cases, he's going to end up saying over here that it's very clear to me that there's a special mitzvah in order to bring your parents closer. So what Rav Sternbach did here is actually fascinating. And I just want to say one thing. If you were to take a look at the tshuva that was written by the conservative movement, because I did mention it last week, and I think that's why Rav Moshe was so reticent, and why Rav Moshe was so, not just reticent, he was so strong against any kind of invitation, you're a mason, because that was the culture in America at the time, that people, rabbis were saying it's allowed. Rav Sternberg just now wrote a better tshuva for the conservatives than they wrote. They didn't know about this halacha. They didn't know that, oh, you're talking about family members as a special obligation. You know, again, they could have built up a much stronger case had they pulled this out. Listen to what he did. I don't want to overstate it, but I do want to just explain what Rav Sternbach did. The Baal Tshuva son says, can I write my parents? Or maybe I'm guilty of Lifnei Iver. So what does he say? It's not Lifnei Iver, because you have in mind for something which is good for them, which now we understand is not Lifnei Iver. It's only Lifnei Iver if you want to put a stumbling block in front of somebody. But if your intention is not to place a stumbling block in front of somebody, if your intention is to help somebody, then it can't be Lifnei Iver. Should I say that again? If your intention is to help somebody, it can't be Lifnei Iver. So I'm going to go back again. If your intention is to help them in terms of a macro way to bring them closer to Judaism, it can't be Lifnei Iver. By definition, it's not Lifnei Iver, because you want to help them. And you realize now that Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Sri Dayesh and so on, they all really pretty much had said the same thing. It can't be Lifnei Iver. I'm going to go back and say, but that's the Pasuk already said it. Lifnei Iver, Lotid Mishal, V'yirei Dilem Akecha, Ani Hashem. God knows I know what your intentions are. My intention is to help the person. It's not Lifnei Iver. So then he goes further than that. He goes, not only is this not Lifnei Iver, if you're talking about bringing your parents back, there's a special mitzvah of redeeming your parents, of geula, redeeming your parents. Your parents are like that girl who's being taken away right now. You have a mitzvah on Shabbat to go out and try to save them. You have a mitzvah to try to save your family relatives. You have a mitzvah to try to bring them back. This is spiritual pikuach nefesh that they're in. You break Shabbat for pikuach nefesh. You break one Shabbat, maybe they'll keep another Shabbat. What just now happened? Which means we just now turned this question, which initially it sounds like it's, okay. Now, again, did Rav Shlomo Zalman go this far? He really didn't. And he's a little bit more conservative. He's a little bit more conservative. Says it's best to offer them a place to stay. Yes, it's always better if you can avoid it. Okay, so you offer them a place to stay. Do you have to? According to what he's writing over here, you don't really have to. And I'm saying it's very interesting, because by bringing this other halacha, and by the way, incidentally, this other halacha, look at source 21, the Mishnah Brura, he quoted before a different one, Nun Vav, Shotzio Bito, Urcha Demilta Nakat. That was the particular case. Vuadin Acher, Rishailacha Shabaka De Latzilo Me Yisura Gadol. He goes, this is not just a case of a family member, which is what Rav Sternbach went and said. Mishnah Berurah doesn't say that. He goes, no, that was the case of the Rashba. But if you know of somebody else who's in spiritual distress, are you allowed to encourage them to come? Is this only a family member? No, not only a family member. If you could, so look, this is a dangerous halacha. Why is this dangerous? Because, you know, I'm going to hang out on the beach on the Tel Aviv on Shabbat. There's a lot of people we can bring back. So exactly how you apply this, I think, needs a great deal of thought and sensitivity and understanding. And I understand why Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't want to publish what he said. It's interesting that Rav Sternbach does publish this, but I'll say it again. If families have asked me, can I invite somebody, a relative, to come, or can I invite a friend to come or something, I'll always ask them, what's your intention? Is your intention just that they should see on a sociological level how religious Jews live? No. Is it just because it's a nice thing? No. If your intention is their spiritual well-being, then the answer becomes yes. Then there's no Lifnei Iver, and then it becomes quite the opposite. Then it becomes a mitzvah. And yeah, this is not an easy halacha to paskin, and very often I'll tell people, ask me on each particular case, and tell me the particular example that came up now, tell me what exactly it is, and you don't have carte blanche, but Rav Sternbach's tshuva is really the most radical of all of them, because he does use this this other halacha of spiritual pikuach nefesh, one which I think that none of us had suspected or known existed. Right, so I'll say it again. What's your intention? Is your intention, because it's nice that my mother's here, is your intention is because I think this can bring her closer. So if your intention is I think I can bring her closer, or at least, you don't want to turn her off. Yeah. But right, but if I think I can bring her closer, but you saw, Rav Shlomo Zalman did say that. That if I don't bring them food, I'm going to turn them off, and that's not right. So, I mean, he was willing to say that, again, the case wasn't Shabbat, and so on. I think that you have what to stand on in such a situation as well. So, I think that it's interesting. Again, if you're asking me for a sociological interpretation of everything that we've seen, which is completely unfair, and I keep saying that, but it may be true anyway, Rav Moshe was confronting a reality where this conservative movement was breaking boundaries, and he felt he had to stand up and to stop this. We can ask, how strong is the conservative reform movement in South Africa? just about non-existent. So Rav Sternbach, being in South Africa, where there's no opposition, so then I don't have to be afraid. By the way, this is very interesting, because, and I don't know if I said this last week, but we have to be, I did say it, I think, we have to be careful in what situations we do what we do because we don't want to be somebody else, or the other side forces us into becoming who we are, or what we think, or how we respond, or what we paskin in a case. But over here, what we've seen is, you know, mamash mikatze lekatze. We've seen from Rav Moshe coming and saying that this is like the greatest sin possible. It's a mesit. You're causing someone to sin, and it's lifnei iver. To move over to Rav Sternberg, saying, no, it's not lifnei iver, and it's the biggest mitzvah that you could possibly do. There's ein kibud av ein gadol mizeh. So again, how do you explain such divergent different approaches to this? So I think that the context that they lived in did cause them to see things in a slightly different way. And generally, the attitude towards non-religious changes. By the way, when you take Rav Sternbach to Eretz Yisrael, and then the other become Zionists, he's not so nice anymore to Zionists. When it comes to Zionists, absolutely not. Can I teach in a Zionist school? Absolutely not. That's his red flag. For Moshe, his red flag may have been conservatives, but for Sternbach, the red flag is Zionists. And religious Zionists are the worst of them, and so on and so forth. So that's where he goes. But when I take him to South Africa and the nice non-religious people, of course you should invite them. It's a mitzvah to invite them. It's a wonderful thing to invite them. So again, you always need to know what the other side is, and then it helps sometimes form who you are. Tov.